Hello, I'm the Duchess of Rutland. I'm so excited to be back with you for another season of Duchess, and this one will be extra special. I'm so grateful I've been able to travel around the country, see beautiful houses, and meet extraordinary people. But I've wanted to finally bring you inside and share all the magic we have here at our very own home, Beaver Castle. So in this six-part limited season, we are exploring my home, Grantham's Great Jewel. Bringing you every piece of its history, art, and culture, all of its past, its present, and the future. So I hope you enjoy this very special season. This is Duchess. Last week, I explored the role of women at Beaver with our brilliant archivist, Vicky Perry. I also sat down with my daughter, Violet, to discuss what the life of a duchess is really like. Make sure you give that episode a listen if you haven't already. On today's episode, we will be talking about the wonders that surround Beaver Castle and the wonders that are within it. Later in the podcast, I meet one of our wonderful tour guides, Olivia, who will take us through a number of ghosts and legends that we have at the castle. But first, let's meet our head gardener, Tom Webster. Tom comes from a family of gardeners. His grandfather worked on a stately home, and he's been with us for many years. Tom is responsible for not only the beautiful sight you see around the castle, but also the fragrance of the gardens. In our conversation, we speak about the history of the gardens, and Tom explains how he is bringing the lost scent of historic lawns back to the present. I'm absolutely delighted to be talking to our head gardener here at Beaver Castle, Tom Webster. Tell me about how that came about.
Oh, the story of how you discovered me. Yes, well, we had a garden competition, you know, in the village. I wasn't going to enter, but my wife did right at the last minute. You arrived in the pouring rain, had a look at the garden where it just happened to be the one day of the year when the garden was at its absolute best. You were suitably impressed, and you asked me rather spontaneously to come up and handle the gardens here.
And how long ago was that, Tom?
It's got to be 6 years.
Was that a surprise at the time?
It was. It was a great surprise, yes.
And you were very emotional, Tom.
I was very surprised. You know, you made my eyes water. You're one of very few ladies to have managed to do that. And yes, it was. It was I have to say, it was a bit of a fairy tale. And
because of your roots, mainly.
Yeah, well, because of my background. I'd retired, of course, so I was simply gardening for a hobby. I'm a lawyer by profession. I was a district policeman for 10 years, so I haven't had the usual route.
And alongside that, yes, you had a very interesting hobby. That is...
Could we be alluding to the fact that I taught karate? And I've sort of carried on doing that. I still do that now. I don't teach, but I still keep the movements keep me alive, as it were. It's very therapeutic.
There we are. And that's exactly what you could, if you're lucky enough to visit our home, see in our garden.
You might see me doing this.
Otherwise, poor Tom is generally having a little stick behind him by me because he's always caught chatting to everyone. So first, if I may, Tom, and thank you so much for joining me today. It's a great honour and pleasure to have you with us in our team. And I speak about my team here as extended family, and that is exactly what you are. So, Tom, you and I, of course, have known each other for 6 or 7 years. But for people who may not know, tell us, Tom, who you are and what you do at Beaver.
Well, I'm the head gardener. I look after the formal gardens here. That would involve, if we take each garden, I look after the rose garden primarily. There's a lot of work to be done there. We do an awful lot of planting in the Japanese woodland. We put in a cherry blossom walk there, so I may not get to see that in all its glory, but it'll be there for posterity. We have extensive gardens, what we call the spring gardens. A lot of work has to be done in those and is still being done. Again, planting, both new varieties and also clearing areas so that we can see the old trees that have been hidden, which is rather intriguing. From my own personal perspective, I'd like to maintain the integrity of these gardens, keep them as they are and as they have been before. But no garden stands still, and you still need to keep developing gardens. A garden won't stay as it is, it needs to be changing all the time. But they have to be sympathetic changes.
Well, that's fascinating. So it seems to me you really love this, embracing the history of these gardens and taking them forward into the future.
Yes. Well, there are layers of history here. And, you know, it's one thing to simply plant things, but you feel this very strongly, I know, is to sort of maintain the integrity of these gardens here, is to sort of plant for the future, develop for the future, but with an eye on the past, what was done here.
And of course, we have 1,000 years of history at Beaver. And throughout that time, the gardens have changed. What did the early gardens and grounds of Beaver look like?
Well, if you look at the old engravings, which we have here, we have the terraces all the way around the castle. These would have been planted very formally, very extensively with bedding plants. I think they would have looked quite magnificent. Nobody would have seen them. Apart from the occupants, the owners of the castle, the public wouldn't have been allowed in to see them, but just the owners.
Are there any other parts of the gardens that have, for you, historical significance here at Beaver?
Somebody did mention this Parliament oak. I hadn't heard of it, in truth, and I looked it up. I mean, the oak genus, Quercus, is one of the largest genus of oaks. I couldn't find a Parliament oak in there. Anyway, I found out that a parliament was simply a meeting of dignitaries to come to a decision, to decide on something, and it was generally in the open air, not necessarily the Houses of Parliament. So the story goes, there's a couple of stories, that one of these parliaments, I think it was the second time that King John was obliged to sign the Magna Carta, not having stuck to it the first time, and this was done under a very old oak tree. I think it was probably in Sherwood Forest, that Parliament oak. And apparently they were all given an oak acorn to take away with them and plant on their estates, one of them being ours. So this was duly planted. You will know where this oak is.
It's sort of in the back of the heronry.
It is it?
Yeah.
But an acorn has been taken from that, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And it is now planted behind the cricket ground there.
And that dates back to the Magna Carta.
Yeah.
But a great source of pride for us here at Beaver is our wonderful association, of course, with Capability Brown. And many avid listeners of this show will be familiar with him already. But for those who aren't, Tom, tell them who was Capability Brown and why he was significant to Beaver.
He was quite a prolific designer. He already had a portfolio of gardens behind him. He certainly changed this estate, and he was looking, the fashion was then, for a picturesque style, a more natural style of gardening. He created vistas, he joined up waterways. He certainly gave us that accessible driveway to get up the castle by filling in what was a ravine, wasn't it, really? So, yes, he did. He changed the estate quite significantly.
I suppose you're dealing with his pleasure grounds, the spaces that he created for the duchesses and family members to enjoy. And they would be the rose garden, the statue garden, the Japanese garden, the spring gardens, the hermit's garden, the Carlisle gardens, Frog Hollow, and the mausoleum gardens. And those are the gardens that we have here at Beaver. And before your time, if I can just share with our listeners, that all of those gardens I have opened up over the last 20 years with a bulldozer and a digger and taken out many, many dead trees, much rubble, and with the help of my inspirational gentleman, Charlie Williams from Burn Coos Nurseries, I have cleared and he has planted, with always the vision in this woodland garden to create one day a national collection. And so that has been my vision.
Yes.
And how do you keep the beds and the borders?
Well, I have some marvellous volunteers. And I always did say that the answer to maintaining these gardens is to build up a super team of volunteers. And we're slowly doing that. We have a team. We've kept that team. They really are marvellous. They've made a massive difference to the gardens here. They really have.
And what do you think they get out of being a volunteer here, Tom?
Well, you know, when they started, when we had the first team, I gave them all an area of the garden. I said to them, look, this is yours. This is your project. You take on this part of the garden as your own. If we take the spring gardens, I said, look, you think about it. Think what you want to plant. This is yours. You get the credit for it. You make suggestions to me with your permission, and we'll go ahead with that. And that's what we've done. So I believe they do get a satisfaction from what looking back and seeing what they're achieving there. And also, this is a magical place to work, you know, in these grounds. I'm not a spiritual sort of person, as you know, but it's an enchanting sort of place to work. It's fulfilling, and I think it's rather marvellous that we've managed to keep all of these volunteers. One would expect a turnover.
And what is the atmosphere like being part of the team who works here to help keep it together?
I think that that's what makes Beaver, is the fact that I don't think there's anybody here that I don't get on with. We all get on very well with each other. It really is, as you've said, a family.
Amazing. But so people who love to visit Stately Homes will often see or hear different types of gardens, like formal or pleasure gardens. Can you name the different types of gardens you are likely to see at Grand Homes?
I guess other gardens, which I don't visit as many as I ought, they will have the formal gardens, they'll have long herbaceous borders. We don't really have a long herbaceous border. We've got one we're developing at the moment. We have more sort of woodland walks with the Japanese woodland, which is simply planted with Japanese or Oriental plants. And then we have these marvellous, the spring gardens, which are a series of terraces in a way, aren't they, with rockeries and what have you. Again, they were called the spring gardens, not simply because of the spring planting, as is generally thought, but rather because we have springs spouting out all over the place. We're still finding them. We've just found a cascade. Is there a larger walled garden in England than what we have here? It's 7.5 acres. You tend to get our visitors, you know, they probably do the rounds of all the formal gardens. They go to Chatsworth, they go to... But this is different to anybody else's. And all the others are sort of manicured, full of visitors, roads, paths. You know exactly where you are. This is the magic of Beaver. You know, that is the enchantment. These are woodland walks. You're never quite sure of where you are. Where does that lead to? Where do those steps go? And I think that's the magical element of Beaver.
And then all of a sudden, round a corner, you see a glimpse of this amazing building.
Yes. People say to me, where is the castle? How do I get back to the castle? I say, well, look, if you just look across there, it's what I call my heart landscaping. You know, not every garden has one. Some people have rocks. I've got a castle in mine. It's rather nice.
That's so nice. I love that. I've never heard you hear say that before, Tom. I just want to ask you if you have a favourite flower and what your favourite herbal or floral scent would be.
Well, I guess it would have to be the rose, simply because I deal with roses an awful lot. Also, I'm at the moment and have been planting old varieties, old-fashioned roses, as people say. Where do you use sometimes modern roses, modern varieties, for the sake of making a nice display? They don't always have the fragrance. And a few old ladies have said to me, well, these roses aren't fragrant, you know. They're not fragrant. So what I've done is I've taken the liberty of getting in these old varieties of roses that may not have the appeal. They may not be flower all the year round. They may not be as compact as one would like. They're a little bit lax in growth, but you can accommodate that by planting three together. But they have that provenance. They have a story to them, have a history to them, and they have a fragrance, an appeal. May not last forever, like a first date, but for that time it's really very appealing. So we've planted a small bed in there with these old-fashioned roses, so it would have to be the rose. Fragrance, I mean, if I walk past a shrub of rosemary, I usually rub my hands on it like this and then do this business, you see, and that gives you its cheap aftershave. But in anticipation of this question, I remember that when I was courting the latest Mrs. Webster, I used to splash on a little bit of something, you know, in the vain hope of arousing her sensibilities, and it was some sort of aftershave balm called Cardi. But it's from the juniper tree that you get a lot of in the south of France. And so it just reminds me of being in the south of France. Not that I would wish to be anywhere else, but here at Beaver Estate. But, you know, sometimes on a rainy day, you think. And I took the liberty, Grace, of just splashing on
Wasted on me, Tom. Sorry.
I just wondered if I...
Totally wasted on me. But juniper berries it is, girls, or boys, whoever's listening to this podcast, Tom Webster's given you his ideal thing for how to win over the girls.
Yes.
I would say the way to win a girl's heart or a woman's heart is be able to know your roses, because there's nothing like an amazing rose garden, is there?
No.
So, Tom, we've got a final question in our wonderful chat today that I've simply adored. So your careers have been diverse, not dissimilar to my own. So you've been a legal man, you've been in the police, you've done karate, and now you're a head gardener. Is there a thread that lines through that rather interesting career line?
And do you mean, where am I going next?
I do.
What what is this massive
Where are
CV
you going to land, Tom?
Leading to? I rather expect to die in the grounds here somewhere. That's where it ultimately leads to. I guess the thread all the way through was always gardening, and one has to wonder, if I'd have started off as a gardener, would I have been entirely happy being a gardener all the way through life and, you know, been a better gardener for it now? And the answer to that is probably no, it wouldn't. You know, you have the ups and downs and you have the variety.
So do you think, Tom, there's a thread here running back to your roots?
Well, you know, certainly when you're coming up to this time of the year where you get a bit nostalgic, very happy memories of childhood and being in those gardens there. The Scawford Hall Gardens, they were nothing special. But as a child, walking around them with grandfather, the smell of the glasshouses, the wild cats in the potting sheds, a grumpy old Colonel Coleman that we were all terrified of.
And that's exactly what you like to do with me, isn't it? I'm the grumpy old Duchess.
I can see
you look at me at times and think, oh, be careful, there she is. So that all goes back to childhood, Tom.
Yes, it does.
It generally
doesn't it? Yes,
and it's been a joy for you to share these wonderful memories with me today. It's been, as I imagined, amusing, entertaining, and well done you for all your loyalty, certainly during those difficult years in COVID when you supported me on a voluntary basis for 2 years. I'm very grateful, and keep flying the beaver flag.
Marvellous. Thank you.
Your carriage awaits. The countdown to Christmas is on as the clock strikes 12 on the 18th of November 2022. Beaver Castle will be transformed into a breathtaking Cinderella-themed scene. Wander through the lavishly decorated spaces for an unforgettable family Christmas experience. For tickets, visit beavercastle.com. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tom, quite a character. Now let's meet Olivia. Olivia is one of the fabulous tour guides you'll meet at Beaver Castle and knows everything when it comes to the ghosts and legends of the estate. I hope you enjoy our chat. Olivia, thank you so much for joining us today on Duchess, the podcast. Let's just talk about you for a moment. You've arrived here through another unusual area, haven't you?
Yes, I joined you just over a year ago as a volunteer. And really, in that year, my role has evolved. And I'd say probably the best way to describe what I do now at Beaver is under the overarching term of engagement. So engaging with our visitors, engaging with our local schools, and really trying to bring the history of Beaver to life and, you know, just encourage people to get really passionate about heritage and about Beaver.
Olivia, where did your passion for heritage come from?
If I can take you back to the summer of 1988, when I was five, and there was jousting held here at Beaver Castle, and I came with my dad, and I remember needing the loo, and he brought me into the castle, and I stood in that guard room as a five-year-old, and I was just awestruck. Really, from there, I was probably the geekiest child on the planet, and I had to visit every stately home, castle, palace, etc. going. So for me, it started here at Beaver, and it only feels right that I'm sort of back here.
And what does this building do to you?
The building for me is an entity in itself, and we're all passing through it, and we all have a role to play and a part to play while we are passing through it, whether that's Duchess, custodian, worker. And I feel like I'm a cog in the right machine.
And can I ask you, this might seem a rather strange question, okay, but do you feel you might have ever been here before?
as you know, the work I do with a lot of our visitors, sometimes we have people come into the castle who purport to be mediums, and I've had two randomly approach me and both tell me that I've been here before.
And doing what?
One believed that I may have been the daughter of an earl or a duke, and the other one was nondescript.
So people passing through, do you hear things bang in the night? Do you feel the presence of other energies within this castle?
I do hear things, but I hear things like music, which often I think I'm going mad, and I'm asking my colleagues, can't you hear that? And they're saying, what are you talking about? But I will sort of hear odd little twiddly bits of music, and I know you play, and I know Lady Eliza plays, and I think, oh, maybe somebody's playing the piano. No, the family aren't at home. I think everybody that passes through leaves an imprint, and we'll be leaving ours right now. And I think sometimes some of us are lucky enough just to be able to tune into that occasionally.
So have you actually seen a ghost here, Olivia?
I haven't seen one. I have had their presence be made aware to me, if you like, through almost every other sense but sight, sound, smell, and sometimes just an all-encompassing feeling. But it's never a frightening feeling. It's warm. You know, this is a family home. This was built as a family home. And that's what I get from it, definitely. I had somebody call my name a few weeks ago in the castle, in the office. Everybody was sort of working away. Nobody was talking. And I heard, Olivia!
Well, not me.
Not you, no. So apparently I looked up like a meerkat, and I said, who's that? And everyone said, what's the matter? And I said, well, someone just called my name. And they said, no, we didn't hear anything. Apparently on that occasion, the colour drained from my face.
So Beaver has so many rooms and immense size, isn't it?
Mm.
In your experience, what are the most haunted rooms in the whole castle?
I think for me, there isn't a particular room. There are hot spots, if you like. So public and staff have seen the cradle in the king's apartments moving. There is apparently poltergeist activity in our commercial kitchen that only ever centres on one shelf. There is apparently a cook who's hanging around in our old kitchen. And one of the mediums that came here actually said she could hear her chastising her scullery maids and telling them to hurry up and, you know, sort of get on with it. But I think for me, and the thing that I've experienced myself, I believe to be the presence of the fifth duchess, and I know her to move around the castle, because when I've experienced that, I've been in different places. So
what have you experienced, Olivia?
So the first time I believe I encountered her, I'd only been here about a month, and I thought, oh, I don't say anything about this, they're all going to think I'm crazy. And I was making a check upstairs, and I sort of stuck my head into the Elizabeth saloon, and something rushed at me. And it almost felt like it rushed through me. And I sort of had to steady myself on the doorframe. And I felt quite disorientated and then noticed quite a strong floral smell. And I thought, okay, that was odd. So I kept it to myself. And it was only as I got to know my colleagues a bit better and people started talking about the ghost of the fifth duchess that I thought, oh, that must be what that was. And then at Christmas again, quite a late night at Christmas, putting the castle to bed, closing everything down, top of the ballroom staircase this time, I started accusing some of my fellow guys of spraying air freshener because this floral smell was so pungent, it was sort of hitting the back of my throat. And of course, I said, what are you talking about? And then as they leveled up with me at the top of the staircase, they could smell it as well. And the smell followed us as we switched off, put the castle to bed for about 20 minutes, and then sort of dissipated.
But she's not actually shown herself to you, but you'd feel she's there?
Yes.
I think just talking to you now, it feels as if there's someone with us in this room. Those hairs are going up right
yeah.
now. And I've had that many times here. And like you, I've never actually seen anyone. I've felt them and I've heard them. And that's almost as you say, that's so aggravating because you run down a corridor hearing a baby cry and then there's no child.
Mm.
Or you go down the corridor thinking someone's intruding a private space and it's vacant. And even last night, I left my glasses upstairs in the beauty room that I've created up in one of the towers and the lights were all off. And I felt a tap on my shoulder. So you never know what's going on. But deeply within my gut instinct is I don't encourage it.
No.
And I don't know why, but, you know, if you have to sleep here every night, you don't want anyone messing with your night times.
No. Absolutely not.
So it's all very nice and spooky to arrive and imagine, but the reality for us is we're living with it. If the children used to see lots of things, I mean, particularly Violet, actually, and particularly Eliza. And Violet had a medieval man in a medieval costume standing in a corridor that took us down to our family kitchen. And he would literally stand with his hand on a chair and not let her pass. And she was only 9, and it was so upsetting to her. And Eliza had 2 little children who'd get out of her wardrobe every night and go and visit her in her bed and tell her she wasn't going to be here at Christmas. So every night, she was only 3, she'd come in at exactly the same time to our bedroom. That was really quite traumatic for the children. Mm-hmm. I was wild. So I'd go around the corridors of this castle telling these annoying spirits and entities and so forth to go to the light. Well, I was always told that if anything's trapped between here and the other side, you encourage them to go to the light. So do you have any idea why these places like Beaver Castle attract this sort of supernatural experience for some people?
Energy accumulates in a place, in a site. And we're on the 4th castle here now. And I think that certainly the walls of this castle hold that energy and that impression. And I think just the estate, you know, the hilltop we're sat upon, it holds all that human energy and it's going to seep out and it's going to sort of permeate our world as well. And sometimes I will go for weeks and weeks here and I'll not notice anything, and then I'll get a flurry of things that I notice. And I think we're all capable of it, but I just think it depends on your headspace and how receptive you are at any given point in time.
It always fascinates me, Olivia, how we have 3 or 4 monasteries built around Beaver. And of course, we know that all these monasteries were built on major ley lines. And the fascination for me is always ley lines. I had an ancestor or a relation of my family called Alfred Watkins, who wrote many books about ley lines. It's fascinating how energy was transferred. And very often between the stately homes, you have major ley lines on a grid. Tell our listeners today, because we have a very strong story about the tradition with witches here at Beaver, don't we? Do you want to share that with our listeners?
We do. It's quite a sad story, really. So the 6th Earl of Rutland was very great friends with King James the First. And James the First loved to come to Beaver for the hunting and the fishing. So when he visited, the Earl needed to bring in a load more staff. And he recruited these 3 ladies from one of the villages. And there was a widowed mother and her 2 grown-up daughters. And they arrived at the castle and they were very, very sort of low down the domestic chain. So very much beneath the notice, certainly of the Earl or the King. And a story sprung up that they became quite disgruntled about some terms of their employment, and they vowed that they would end the line of the Earl of Rutland. Now, the Earl of Rutland had a daughter, and from his 2nd marriage, he had 2 little boys. So he had an heir and a spare, if you like. And then in quick succession of one another, these 2 little boys passed away. An illness wasn't detected. So it was immediately put out there that these 3 ladies had cursed these little boys and the cause of death was witchcraft. Now, if you know much about James the First, you'll know that he was quite enthusiastic about witchcraft, and he sort of jumped on this. You know, this proves my point. He'd written books about it. Not even the aristocracy can sort of escape the evils of witches. And these poor ladies were placed on trial. And sadly, the mother apparently died on her way to Lincoln Castle, where she was going to be imprisoned. And the 2 daughters were hanged for a crime that we know they can't have committed.
There's a very interesting thing that I actually did here with some friends of mine who are very spiritual. A couple of years ago, we planted 3 oak trees to represent and do a little ceremony to say sorry for the death of those 3 women. And it was tragic what was happening to women at that time. I'm sure there were witches out there, but the very word witch means apparently wise woman. And so there were some very wise women who were burnt incorrectly. And so as we go forward into the future, Some of our journey is not to wipe away, I believe, our history, but just to give our blessing to them.
I think so. And I think it's really important that we kind of go full circle and we do try and absolve ourselves almost of that sort of collective wrongdoing.
Absolutely. That was lovely. Thank you, Olivia. With all these legend and ghostly stories and goings on, it would make sense that people felt scared when they are here. Do you feel frightened in the castle, Olivia?
I've never felt frightened here. I've only ever felt that warmth from Beaver Castle. You know, there are times where I've been here late and castle's in darkness and I've had to go through to another room to collect something. And, you know, you are going through in darkness, but even at that point, I've never felt afraid. I can't tell you that I felt alone, but I've certainly not felt afraid at all. So...
That's good to hear. Very good to hear. I remember driving over here on the day before we got married, on the 5th of June 1992, and my father turning to me in the back of the car and saying to me, because I've also always had a sort of deep intuition about things, that's all I should say most probably, saying to me, when you arrive in this family, you must keep your head low. And I didn't understand exactly what he meant. But sometimes, you know, as you rightly say, it's so difficult to explain that intuition to people who aren't on that same plane. Mm-hmm. And so I think he was telling me that as a form of protection, because in my father's mother's side of the family, they had been burnt at the stake for being witches many years ago. And so there is that ability to keep your head below. And of course, it was the aristocrats who were burning us. So maybe there is a connection. I don't know. But I've never delved too much. But I just keep a safe distance and keep your aura strong around you and your sword in the air.
Good advice. So, Your Grace, if you were fortunate enough to meet one of these spirits or ghosts here at Beaver, who would it be and what would you ask them?
Oh, it's always going to be Elizabeth. And I'd say to her, I've done my best to finish off your legacy.
Amazing.
And what would yours be?
I'm going to stick with the theme of Elizabeth, but I'm going to say her husband, John Henry, because I think Elizabeth's such a strong character. And I think what I'd really want to say to the fifth Duke is, you must have been so proud.
Oh, well, we're both Elizabeth fans.
We are.
That was amazing. Thank you, Olivia.
You're more than welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tom and Olivia, for coming on the show today. Everyone who comes to the castle, owe both of you so much for bringing joy and splendour to Beaver. Next week on the podcast, we speak about two very important parts of a stately home. I will be meeting with Orlando Rock, chairman of Christie's UK, to discuss the art and heirlooms we have here at Beaver. I will also be speaking to Philip and Emma, joint managing directors of Sybil Colfax, about the interiors and design at Beaver. I just have a few final things to share with you. Please follow the podcast where you listen to them. So to keep up with the times, we've just started a TikTok account. And if you're interested in additional behind-the-scenes content, please follow at Duchess the Podcast. Also, I love to learn more about you and your story. Please write to me at our listener inbox. The email address you need is duchess@duchessthepodcast.com or visit our website. This show was produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the editor and producer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Selena Christofidis is the graphic designer. I've been your host, the Duchess of Rutland. And this has been Duchess.